North Korea is moving forward on this path of developing an intercontinental missile.
North Korea says its new missile can carry a nuclear warhead. It's Tuesday, May 16th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you to join us online as well at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, Asia hit with a massive cyber attack. Beijing hopes to prosper from a new Silk Road. The U.S. ambassador to Myanmar discusses recent religious violence. Vietnam's first female billionaire and lunar technology at the movies. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korea said Monday its latest missile launch was a new type of mid- to long-range rocket with the capability of carrying a large-scale heavy nuclear warhead. Japan's chief cabinet secretary says the launch represents progress in the North's ballistic missile development, posing a new level of threat. U.S. United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley says the U.N. Security Council will meet later today on the latest missile test, which on Sunday traveled nearly 800 kilometers, reaching an altitude of more than 2,100 kilometers, and then falling into the Sea of Japan, close to Russian territory.
They're concerned. I mean, this is getting kind of close to home for them, and so they're concerned. And I think certainly what we're going to start doing is rallying the troops again and say, okay, what do we need to do next? And listen, I mean, there's a lot of sanctions left that we can start to do, whether it's with oil, whether it's with energy, whether it's with their maritime ships, exports. We can do a lot of different things that we haven't done yet, so our options are there. But what we have to do is send a strong, unified message that this is unacceptable, and I think you'll see the international community do that.
Haley said despite leader Kim Jong-un's professed interest in meeting President Donald Trump, launching a missile is definitely not the way to hold talks. Joel S. Witt, a senior fellow at the U.S.-Korea Institute at SAIS and a senior research fellow at Columbia University Weatherhead Institute for East Asian Studies, tells VOA his assessment on the latest North Korea missile test and what it means to international attempts to deal with the situation.
I think the most important thing about this test is that it seems that it's quite possible that the North Koreans have started to test some of the technologies that would be needed to build an intercontinental ballistic missile. And by that I mean the high loft of the missile may have been intended, for example, to test a reentry vehicle that would allow a nuclear warhead to reenter the Earth's atmosphere unharmed after an intercontinental flight. They probably have to at least conduct one or two tests of the full system. And it's very difficult to predict when that could happen. Some experts think it might happen within the next year. Others think it might take a little longer. But the bottom line is that North Korea is moving forward on this path of developing an intercontinental missile that would, of course, threaten the United States.
Joel Witt adds, while the U.S. stance has been to pressure the North, Pyongyang is using similar tactics at the same time.
They are upping the pressure on all of us, but at the same time, they're holding open the door to starting some sort of dialogue. So this is the flip side of the coin. We're practicing coercive diplomacy against them. They're practicing it against us. So I wouldn't expect them to exercise unilateral restraint. That's just not in their DNA.
The story is evolving every hour. Keep up with the latest by following the VOANews.com website and VOA Asia Facebook. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. New South Korean president tested by latest North Korean missile. Hong Kong rejects asylum for refugees who sheltered Snowden. Gingerly, deals start taking shape between rivals China and Vietnam. Asian lawmakers say region pivotal in fighting climate change. Malaysia seizes 330 exotic tortoises from Madagascar. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more on Facebook at VOA Asia, and also check out our VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Businesses and governments in Asia Monday reported additional disruptions as employees turned on their computers and checked email, part of a major cyber attack that began Friday, affecting more than 150 countries and hundreds of thousands of computer users. Stephen Wilson, the head of Europol's European Cybercrime Center, said the so-called ransomware attack was unprecedented.
We've seen much more complex things before, but what's new is the use of a worm to actually propagate through systems. This has led to a far greater uptake of the malware across systems, and as a consequence, has caused significantly more problems.
The attack, according to Microsoft President and Chief Legal Officer Brad Smith, used malicious software that may have been stolen from the U.S. National Security Agency. In his blog, Smith said governments should treat this attack as a wake-up call. Mark Weatherford, chief cyber strategist for the California-based data security company VArmor, tells VOA's Victor Beatty such an attack, while serious, is not wholly unexpected.
This has been one of the challenges that we in the industry have faced for decades, really, and that is as updates and patches are released by the software vendors, the expectation is that these will be deployed as quickly as possible. But it isn't always that easy. I mean, there's a lot of testing that typically has to be done before deploying these kind of patches. So in this specific instance, Microsoft released the patch for this vulnerability back in March, and the fact that it affected so many different systems in so many different countries is a clear indication that people are not taking it seriously enough to update and apply the patches when they're available. It's a big deal because it did impact so many different people. The healthcare in the UK was probably the most bold example of customers not being able to get care.
Microsoft President Chief Legal Officer Brad Smith said in a blog post that the malicious software appears to have been stolen from the U.S. National Security Agency, an example of why stockpiling of vulnerabilities by governments is a big problem.
So I agree with that in general, but at the same point, Microsoft created the vulnerability, or they allowed the vulnerability to happen. At the same time, and I haven't verified this yet, but I read somewhere that the NSA actually identified this vulnerability to Microsoft back in August of last year.
Is this the kind of thing we're going to have to grapple with in the future as well as the present?
We've been living this for decades. I would say that in this specific case, it would not surprise me to see more of these kinds of events. All it takes for the bad guy to continue this is to tweak the code just a little bit, and, you know, we'll have the same vulnerability again. So those of us that have been in this business, this is exactly the kind of thing that we worry about every single day, that we'll have a big aggregate cybersecurity event. This is not a one-off event. It's an event that affects a significant portion of the globe that's using this, these different versions of Microsoft Windows. And it could be any other application or operating system that is widely used across the globe.
The attack has impacted manufacturers, hospitals, schools, transport, banks, government agencies, telecommunications firms. It freezes computers. A warning screen says files have been encrypted and demands a ransom through online Bitcoin payments, or the files would be deleted. Efforts are underway to prevent more dangerous variants of the malware from infecting computer systems. If the cyber attacks have affected your day, we'd like to hear your story. You can write to us, if you can, on Facebook at VOA Asia or send us an email at voaasia@voanews.com. Happening now in Asia, the United Nations says conflict-related incidents in Afghanistan killed more than 280 children in the first 4 months this year. That's a 21% increase compared to last year. The UN says the number of child fatalities is the highest since it began documenting civilian casualties in 2009. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thank you so much for listening today. China says nearly 30 heads of state who were attending its first Belt and Road Forum joined Beijing in signing a communique pledging to fight protectionism and ensure free and inclusive trade. VOA's Bill Eyde in Beijing tells us China also used the meeting to assure other countries about the scope and aims of the ambitious initiative.
When President Xi Jinping launched the Belt and Road Initiative more than 3 years ago, the focus was largely on trade and connectivity. It still is, but during a two-day forum in Beijing, it became clear that the project is now much, much more.
We're endeavoring to connect overland passages with seaports and establish infrastructure networks of land and sea routes. We'll also step up soft connectivity, such as information sharing, mutual recognition of regulations, and mutual assistance in law enforcement, cooperation in areas including sustainable development, fighting against corruption, poverty reduction, and disaster mitigation.
Through the Belt and Road Initiative, China wants to put its unique stamp on globalization and international trade. But not all countries are jumping on board.
Germany is not as a country asked to be part of the initiative, but that German companies are asked to be part of it. And for the German companies, it's always relevant that they know what is going to be built, and that the procedures to be part in these buildings are the same for every company and every country.
China's vows to fight protectionism and promote free trade are in sharp contrast with its restrictions on foreign companies at home. And many are still skeptical of the plan. More than 100 countries and organizations participated in the meetings, including a delegation from the United States and North Korea. Russian President Vladimir Putin was among the high-profile participants. In a bizarre twist, Putin played the piano while waiting for a meeting with Xi. The same day, North Korea carried out its latest missile launch. China says countries participating in the Belt and Road Forum have agreed to an action plan listing 270 goals, with another meeting scheduled for 2019. Bill Eyde, VOA News, Beijing.
And there's video with Bill's report. Stop by voanews.com or our VOA Asia Facebook page to see it. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Hong Kong authorities have rejected asylum requests from a group of refugees who sheltered Edward Snowden in what their lawyer said is retaliation for helping the former NSA contractor. Snowden hid in Hong Kong for 2 weeks in June 2013 after he leaked documents revealing extensive U.S. government surveillance. Follow the latest on VOA Asia Facebook. As we continue with VOA Asia, ethnic hatred has plagued Myanmar since 49 years of military rule ended in March 2011, and it seems to be spreading, threatening the country's historic democratic transition. In a majority Buddhist country known as the Golden Land for its glittering pagodas, monks have played a central role in anti-Muslim unrest over the past decade and incidents in just the past few days. VOA reporter Chao Cha Tian explored the issue in an exclusive on-camera interview this past week with U.S. Ambassador to Myanmar, Scott Marshall. The ambassador stresses rule of law is the best way to deal with recent religious tensions between a Buddhist extremist group and local residents in downtown Yangon.
First, I'd say that the only information I have is what I've read in press reports, so I certainly don't have all the facts. To me, this is really a matter of rule of law. I think what's important in this case, or any case like this, is that the law be applied fairly. If citizens have concerns about possible illegal actions or illegal events, then normally they would notify law enforcement, and then law enforcement, if they thought there was reason, could take action. But law enforcement personnel normally would take the action. So again, based on the press reports, it would be unusual and frankly problematic to have citizens accompanying law enforcement to look into a possible crime. It raises a lot of concerns and a lot of problems. This is a new democracy, so I understand, but I think the hope would be as Myanmar builds rule of law, that citizens would raise any concerns they have with law enforcement, and then law enforcement takes over from there so that you avoid situations of crowds getting involved in trying to enforce what they see as the law.
What about if this kind of incidents were ever happened in country like U.S., I mean, democracy countries, mm-hmm. much more experienced than in Burma, would the response be different?
Well, first of all, I'd say no country, including the United States, is perfect. We all have mistakes and failings. But normally what would happen is that if there was a problem that some citizens identified, the police would, if they thought there was reasonable cause, would take action. They would not go with citizens to investigate a crime. I think that's really important. And citizens would not be allowed to accompany or to participate in any kind of law enforcement action. That's how you get this kind of possible situation of violence between communities, between citizens, which you want to avoid. So I think it's really important that the law enforcement be left to law enforcement personnel, and that concerned citizens not be directly involved.
So how could U.S. help to improve the law enforcement situation of capacity or skills of law enforcement, and also other in rules of law sector? Yeah. How could U.S. be in the position to help to improve?
Well, we're trying. We're doing some assistance and training of police. We're working in support of some of the rule of law centers that the government has been working to establish around the country. But to be honest, a lot of this, again, it's a new democracy. So people, it takes time for societies to learn how they want their democracy to operate and what rule of law means. So I think some of this is just giving people an opportunity to learn, hopefully to have exposure to other countries, see how it's done in other places. And, you know, we certainly want to help with that. We are helping with that, and we'll continue to.
U.S. Ambassador to Myanmar Scott Marshall speaking with VOA reporter Cha Cha Tin. A Myanmar official of religious affairs said the ministry will take action against monks involved in recent clashes through a central Buddhist monks association. However, the monks say they're just helping the group involved not to be violent, and pointed back to local Muslims who say they are creating unstable situations. Developing at this hour in Asia, Malaysian customs officials have seized a cache of smuggled exotic tortoises worth more than $250,000. After receiving a tip, authorities found 330 tortoises in five boxes labeled as stones in the cargo area of a Kuala Lumpur International Airport. The latest news every day is on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, wealth can be measured in many ways, although most of us at one time or another have probably thought what it might be like to have an extreme amount of money. Forbes magazine keeps track of the richest people in the world and publishes an annual list of the top 100 billionaires. We noticed this year the first female from Vietnam to be included on that list. Ha Nguyen is one of VOA's Vietnamese correspondents. She joins us to introduce to us who this woman is.
Nguyen Thị Phương Thảo.
Okay, and she is the CEO of
Vietjet Air. And that's the first low-cost airline in Vietnam.
And obviously it's doing very well.
It's doing very well. It's getting very popular. And it's doing well because it's the first low-cost airlines. It kind of breaking the monopoly of the, you know, national flag carrier Vietnam Airlines. So it makes the Vietnam Airlines to be competitive. It's kind of giving them a very tough competition in the airlines field. Yeah.
And this is a big deal to have a woman become the first billionaire on the list.
And she has been praised as a very brave woman to break into the very tough field of business.
What is business usually like in Vietnam? It's male-dominated?
Mostly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually. But now a lot of women are getting, you know, into that field, and they're getting very wealthy, and they're very good, too. Mm-hmm. And they've been known for being very tough during the war, for fighting the war. Mm-hmm. And now they're tough, too, in the business field.
apparently there are several millionaires in Vietnam who have earned a lot of money, a lot from real estate and that sort of thing.
There are a lot of millionaires, but so far there are 2 billionaires recognized by Forbes. But the Knight Frank's wealth report this year, they said Vietnam has 3 billionaires, and one of them was not listed in the Forbes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's a very well-known in Vietnam, too. Yeah, he's getting his wealth from mostly from the exchange, from the stock market.
Is this CEO very visible? Do we know a lot about her?
She's been doing for some time, but she's been with her husband. They started as doing business with the real estate. And I think, and that's a lot of millionaires and billionaires in Vietnam. I mean, in US dollars, not in Vietnamese dong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a millionaire in Vietnamese dong, too.
Okay, that puts it in perspective.
So most of them, you know, become millionaires and billionaires from, you know, doing with real estate in Vietnam.
And then they go from there into other
from
things.
From there, to other things, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And that's the Vietjet story as well.
Yeah.
As they started out in real estate.
They started out in real estate, yeah. The Vietnamese market, it's just opened recently. If you know how to take advantage of even the loopholes in the Vietnamese policies,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them get a lot of, you know, good relations with the government officers and get some good position land. And then they just sell it for higher price. And from there, yeah, they get rich.
This is a pretty good indication of Vietnam's growing economy. I understand you were recently there and you've seen a lot
of
growth.
I've seen a lot, yeah. It's changing.
A lot growing in Vietnam, millionaires, and now a couple of billionaires.
A couple of billionaires. And according to the Knight Frank's wealth report recently, it said that Vietnam now has 14,000 millionaires.
Wow. We all aspire to do well. Han Nguyen doing very well with us at VOA. Thank you so much for bringing us this story.
Thank you. Now I want to be a millionaire too.
Okay. Well, as we move from the fantasy of perhaps having extravagant wealth to science fiction movies that perhaps you've seen in the theaters or maybe on your phone, which often portray imaginary technology. But now, a real-life moon rover has made it onto the big screen. Not only is it the star of a new film, VOA's Deborah Block tells us it will also play a starring role on a private mission to the moon next year.
The new moon rover made its debut in London at the premiere of Alien Covenant, the latest installment in the Alien movie series. In this film, the vehicle roams a previously unknown planet to gather scientific information. But in real life, the rover will go by rocket to the moon to record information, including data on a buggy left on the lunar surface nearly 45 years ago. The buggy was used by Apollo 17 astronauts during the last mission NASA, the U.S. Space Agency, sent to the moon. Volunteer scientists and engineers with a Berlin-based startup called Part-Time Scientists collaborated with Audi, the German auto manufacturer, to create the rover.
The rover has 4 wheels which can be steered independently, which allows us to like turn on this board and drive sideways. It also has 3 cameras, 2 of which are for regular stereo vision, and 1 is a scientific camera which allows us to analyze the moon buggy.
The mostly aluminum vehicle weighs only 35 kilograms and has a hybrid engine powered by a rotating 100-watt solar panel.
If you look at today's technology, everything is very power efficient, very small, and readily available for us.
The machine was tested in harsh conditions. Plans are for the rover and an identical twin to travel within 200 meters of the Apollo buggy and send HD images to Earth. Both vehicles will remain permanently on the moon. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
We're glad that here on Earth you can listen to our program, and we thank you for listening to VOA Asia. A shout out to all of our friends listening through Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chung Rung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan, and all of our listeners in Myanmar listening via Facebook at VOA Burmese. Thanks so much. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Daryl Smith, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, which includes Ali Ogden and now David Bird. Welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a great day.